Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It is February 28th. This month is almost over, thank goodness. And it's another very, very, very cold day. I'm not sure what happened to our weather.
Yeah, the weather thing. I was looking at, like, last week said we were getting a warmer weather, and then the weather thing totally betrayed us. So, like, right now it's 13.
it's
shocking. The sun's out. See, this is my theory, and you don't listen. You've not listened to me. When I do not like sunny winter days because it means cold, because you have a high pressure system in place. That's why it's sunny. And the high pressure system means Arctic blast weather coming in from Canada. So in the winter, you want it to be dark and gloomy because then the temperatures are, you know, in the 30s or 40s.
I mean,
so look, tomorrow it's going to rain. It's going to be 43 degrees.
It can't go from like -7 to 43 in 24 hours.
And then on Thursday, it's going to be down to 13 again.
Oh my gosh.
And Friday, it's going to be 9 degrees is the low. But we're going to get higher. But then back on Monday, like next Monday, we get to 50.
This is why everybody gets sick. It's the lurching back and forth between really cold and really warm.
Right. And they say, okay, so March comes in like a lion and leaves like a lamb in every other place in the world.
No, but it
in Binghamton, it comes in like a lion and then and goes leaves like a lion.
It's like a
doesn't change.
Dragon.
Right.
Well, like a ice polar, a snow apocalypse. What is the animal from that claymation program, that the abominable snowman? Is that what it is? Somebody in our street puts one of those up every Christmas. It's pretty great. I really love it.
the one with the in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that
the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Yeah.
Claymation show.
Yeah, that's 60s. How March goes up.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's
what we're talking about today.
No, I had something to say.
We're confining our remarks to the weather.
This is why on St. Patrick's Day, which is, what is it, the 12th?
14th? 15th, something.
Yeah. So, like, when I lived down south in Texas, I used to watch those cool parades with the men in kilts banging their drums, like going through the streets of New York. But parade day here.
Oh, ours is like 2 weeks earlier.
It was two weeks earlier than
because
that.
all the bands practice at all the little towns. Like, they go all over New York and Pennsylvania practicing. That's how they get their time in. So you have to take your parade day whenever you can get it.
Right.
So ours is always like 0 degrees.
Yeah, I remember looking out our patio window, like when I used to have my office in there, and I had to have a massive space heater because it's so cold. But people outside, like, they're just shoving themselves into layers and layers of clothing. And it's wind, like the Arctic wind is blasting, and they're all out there, you know.
Well, if you drink enough.
I guess so, because that's true.
That's why people drink a lot more here, probably, than at other parades, because that's how you get through the horrible parade.
I remember the first parade day, we didn't know what it was. It was like 2002 or 2003. It must have been 2003 because we weren't here for parade day in 2003, too. But anyway, I was driving to work. And
there's like people, drunken
students. Like, I thought I didn't know what was wrong. Like, was it from last night? No, it was from this morning.
Yeah.
It's 9 a.m. and there are drunken students on the sidewalk.
I know. I'm sure people die of hypothermia on parade day. I've never gone. I'm never going to go out there unless I have my heated vest. If I got heated gloves and heated trousers and a heated hat, then I would go to parade day. But as I said, we didn't get on here today to just talk about the weather, but we probably could for the hour. Like,
we have lots to say.
We have lots to say about the weather. There's a lot of things we could say. Today is the fourth or fifth day of the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Do you want to weigh in?
I know that the world I mean, I'm surprised we haven't been asked to weigh in before this.
I mean, I know.
Maybe we haven't. All the requests went to spam.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we could say, give peace a give. Well, we're giving war a chance. Give peace a chance.
I'm surprised we. I guess. So yes.
War is bad.
It's only taken 5 days, and already, like. Well, if George Soros supports Ukraine, then Ukraine must be bad. I'm seeing starting to pop up, and don't believe the lies about Russia. Don't believe the lies about Ukraine. So it's just.
Well, those posts started immediately. My Twitter feed was immediately full of everything you're hearing about this global conflict is wrong.
Yeah.
I get those, like, every third tweet is somebody saying, you don't know what's happening.
Actually.
Well, and that is so discouraging because, I mean, I don't know what's happening. So well, I would but, like okay. to know. I'd like
we do
to
know what's
out.
Happening in some sense because we, you know, we, not we personally, but we know people who have missionaries in Ukraine. And what they're saying is exactly what we're hearing in the news. It's not
like the Russians are invading.
The Russians are literally invading and killing civilians, and it's a bad thing. And you know, of course, you know, there's like there were in the beginning days, like several things that proved to be not true. Like there's several
the ghost of Kiev.
The ghost of Kiev. This fighter pilot who shot down Kiev.
What we could do is. Do a long discussion about whether or not we should call it Kiev or Kiev. And what I liked about that discussion was that both sides were trying to claim moral superiority over the other side, which is pronouncing the name.
Oh, yeah.
Like when everybody started saying Kiev, which I think people do in good faith when they discover that they've been using the colonizer term for the whole of their lives. When they're told, oh, well, the people who live there call it this other thing. It's totally fine to say, oh, I'm sorry, y'all. Like in India, wasn't it? They've several names of big, huge cities have reverted back to what people were calling them before. So that doesn't make you like a bad person to suddenly be like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll call it this other thing that you're telling me to call it now. Like, why are you... Stop yelling at me.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should insist on calling Istanbul Constantinople because it's his real name.
Yeah.
I don't care what people say. But so, like I was saying, there's several things that came out that were untrue. Like, the ghost of Kiev... And then the fighter pilot
who shot
down.
I'm saying you should call it Kiev. You just did it again.
Whatever. I don't know how to pronounce it. What else was? Oh, the Snake Island thing, which I think was, I think that's it was an accurate recording where the 13 defenders told the Navy ship where to go. But it turns out they. Either they surrendered or the other people on the island surrendered. I don't know what it was, but anyway.
Dude. So they didn't all get killed.
But people, of course, you know, here's the thing. Yeah, the Ukraine is in a fight for its life, its national life. So, of course, people are going to grab onto anything and believe every rumor that puts forward a hero because the people just have to have a hero during this time. So it's not, there's no coordinated, you know, George Soros, let's put these false hero stories to capture the imagination of the world. It's literally a desperate time when people are trying to find something to have to cling on to. So exploding the Miz is fine, I guess, but it's not proof that, you know, this is all a conspiracy to destroy the valiant Putin or whatever people are trying to say. It's just very strange.
I know. I did. That's a. Like, so, I mean, both of these countries have been in the news in the last 10 years, and it seems like things have been really complicated and corrupt and bad on all fronts. Like, that's how everything is. That's what I'm sort of astonished by.
Right. Because people are saying, well, the Ukraine is corrupt. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so I know. And so is Russia. But I don't think that means that you can't feel like sad when Ukrainians are losing their lives just because they have a corrupt government, just like we do.
Right.
Whenever we're invaded, I'm going to feel really sad about that.
Yeah.
And wish that the invading armies were not coming in to take us over, even though we have very corrupt situations here and very wicked people live in America. Like,
right. Right.
It's like everybody forgot what humanity is until, you know, just now.
Yeah.
Like they all knew that people were bad, but they forgot it. And now you can only root for the people who are good.
Huh. And okay. And despite, I mean, I do think there are actually some real, real heroism. I think the president of Ukraine staying in the middle of Kiev while instead of running to Poland or somewhere, that's heroic. Leaders don't do that anymore. It's like the thing I'm reading this biography of Julius Caesar, and it was expected if you were leading legions into battle, that you would be somewhere near the front because you're the one
who
made them go. And then that was kind of the norm for the European kings. I mean, the most kings were expected to be in the front or somewhere in the thick of it. So I think it was a Black Prince when they were fighting the French. He was in, his retinue was being threatened, and I forget which battle it was. His retinue was surrounded and cut off, and a messenger came to the king who was watching the battle. He was older by this time, he couldn't take part, and said, "Hey, you know, want to send somebody to rescue your son?" And he said, "Well, let him earn his spurs," or something like that. And he did. He got out of it, and he earned his spurs. So that was, but that's like the kind of old way of thinking about leadership, in which we've kind of translated into leadership for like companies and churches and other organizations. But and I'm sure higher commanders and military leaders do that. But you know, presidents don't go fighting. Presidents don't go in the front lines with their troops.
Well, it could be like, depending on who the president was, could be make things worse. You know, like
yeah, that's true.
You have to have all of your armored vehicles and everybody and all of yours, you know, so it seems like this is a lighter, more flexible situation. Like he doesn't have a big bodyguard. Maybe he does, but
he has a bodyguard.
But the most important thing isn't necessarily keeping him safe all the time.
Right.
Otherwise he would get in the way.
Right.
I mean,
it would be better for him to not be in front if that was the case.
Yeah.
But I think he recognizes that the country is in a fight for its life, and so he's got to. It'd be better for him to be in the fight and maybe even die. I mean, if he were killed, he would be a martyr, and it wouldn't be well for. That would not serve Russia's purposes well, if he were to die. So anyway, that's a real heroic thing. That's a real admirable thing, and then.
So then on Twitter, people were getting online. I saw in the middle of the night, because that's when I've been scrolling. Well, you know, he supports abortion and gay rights. And so, you know, gotcha. I'm like, well, he's a European. So,
yeah,
like, of course he does. And Putin doesn't. So we've all thought that was great about Putin. But maybe that's the only good thing that there is about Putin. Like
you can still admire someone's bravery even if they have really bad ideas about other things. That's it. You know, there's like,
no,
someone can still be doing something brave and act and behaving as a good leader even when they have ideas that are hellish, like abortion. I mean, that you can still say, okay, that was a brave thing for that person to do.
No, I don't think you can say that. I think. That's the problem, is that you can't say anything like that because everybody has to be, you know, 100% something all the time. So
then the other thing is I've been hearing is that, well, Russia had every right to invade, not every right, but Russia was right to invade because NATO was encroaching on its borders. But, you know, there's a reason why Eastern European nations want to be in NATO. It's a real logical reason why like Poland would want to be in NATO, and it is in NATO, and Estonia and Latvia And it's not too hard to figure out. And that's because Russia historically has been expansionistic.
And is literally invading a country right now.
Literally invading a country right now. And it even said, Putin even said that he wants to reestablish the border boundaries of the USSR, which is far into, which would mean some of the nations that are currently nations wouldn't be nations anymore. So for Putin to complain about NATO having weapons on its border, well, there's consequences for expansionistic behavior.
If he would be,
if no one had any worry at all about Russia expanding, then there wouldn't be any need for NATO weapons on his border. If you know, we're not about to invade Mexico, so the idea that I think the last time we had a violent exchange with Mexico was like in the 1840s. So we're not seeking Mexican territory. And so the analogy between Russians putting, you know, missiles in Mexico is a ridiculous one, because it's not the same thing, because we're not threatening Mexico. We're not threatening Canada. So if Canada put missiles in our backyard from Russia, that would be ridiculous, because what are you protecting? It would be a waste of resources. But we do put missiles in Poland because there's a legitimate reason to fear that Russia might expand and destroy things, as it's presently doing.
Well, what about, I don't know, I find the lay of the land really confusing, because a lot of people who I sort of have, I don't even know who these people are, but I have, you know, maybe agreed with some of their tweets, are very pro-Russia right now. Like,
who's this?
Well, I can't remember.
Oh, like some people
on Twitter who, you know, well, I might agree with them theologically, are suddenly like, Russia is great, you know. And the Ukraine is horrible, and you don't know anything that's going on. That's what they always say. Yeah. And I think, well, but I mean, there's a lot of nice things about Russia. The people of Russia are really nice. Isn't it possible to be sad that Russia is invading Ukraine? Even,
yeah.
I mean, I'm circling back to what I already said. I just am surprised by some people very, very excited or angry about people being on the side of Ukraine.
I had a lot of sympathy for Russia before this. I recognized it's who Putin is, but you know, compared to the United States, their abortion policy is much more humane. Compared to the United States, they actually uphold marriage. There's a semblance of, you know, when Putin has tried to reestablish not communism but czarism, I guess you might say, the state and the church together, had a strong man leadership. That's right. Historically, Russia is used to what Putin's doing. This is classic Russian
classic
leadership.
Russia.
Yeah, you need a strong guy in there who, you know, is going to break bones, and he's a strong man, and that's kind of what the Russian, that's Russia has always kind of gravitated toward that. But he's done some horrible things, and as the president of Russia, he's shut down, he's in the process of doing it even further, shutting down free speech. Russia's not a liberal democracy by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, viewed from God's perspective, which nation is more righteous? Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, only God can know. That's the problem.
Because we are extremely guilty for abortion and the gay stuff and the trans stuff in a way that Russia isn't. But Russia is an aggressive empire. So, and the Archbishop of Russia is, I mean, he's almost like he works for the KGB. I don't know. He's like very... the patriarch is like super. I mean, if you think that, you know, the SBC is plagued by Christian nationalism, go to the Russian Orthodox Church.
Okay, so that's a nice segue for the other really interesting thing is all the discussion about militant masculinity, because
yeah,
in the patriarchy,
because
so I guess what it feels like to me, which is what a lot of people have been saying, is that you cannot escape a patriarchal world. Like, that was the whole point of the critique that we've had about Jesus and John Wayne and biblical womanhood and all that, is that you either get a good patriarch or a bad one. And what's interesting, just visually, is if everybody loves Zelensky.
Yeah.
He's literally what, you know, evangelicals, I think, for the last 100 years were like, that's a good man. And then you look at Putin and you're like, that's a bad man.
Right.
There's your bad patriarchy. Here's your good patriarchy. Yeah. Like, you Zelensky can tell.
He's been posturing on just like John Wayne. And this is the kind of things he says on his video show. That's what John Wayne would say.
Yeah.
And then the people who love Jesus and John Wayne think he's hot, right?
So hot. That's like the swooning of the women.
So they're basically trying to emasculate American men, but they're really happy with.
When the nationalism and the patriarchy comes from somewhere else, then and here's the thing, shocker, it's really attractive when a man behaves like an actual man, a good one. I mean, like, men can behave like bad men, but there is something that a chord that is struck. A deep chord that is struck when people behave according to what they are, their biological whatever. And when you try to bash that down or say that it doesn't exist or that it's inherently wicked, you have to tell so many other kinds of lies.
Right.
It's just interesting to me how quickly they disappear when in a time of crisis, when a good, somebody shows up with a gun and is best. Everybody's like, oh, he's so great.
The sickness of wokeness, the sickness of critical theory and all that kind of stuff just kind of pops to the surface when you see that, you know, the women involved and pushing wokeness can't help but fall all over a man when he acts like a man. I mean, you can see it's just so unnatural. It's so counter human nature. It's counter, you know, the God's design, because even the theory just won't hold up. Like, if we were invaded in the way that the Ukraine was, we don't want any of the kind of men that K.K. Dume and others have been trying to craft over the last decade. If we had a nation full of those men, we would be lost. And I think we're coming close to having a nation full of those men.
So I don't mean to jumble everything together, but I did finally see, because I guess you tweeted it, but Beth Allison Barr said something on Twitter, and then a person named who goes by the name of Chrissy Stroop,
who's a man dressed up and pretending to be a woman and pretending to be a Christian,
corrected her.
Yeah.
Like, really harshly. Yeah. And then she apologized. And I thought, like, I was really shocked by that. I don't think men should speak that way to women. As speaking as a woman, when men talk, that was the whole thing. Like, don't, women have, I think, rightly complained about being spoken to in an inappropriate way by men through the centuries. So, yeah. But here it's okay. Like, I would agree. It's really not okay for conservative men to speak to women this way. So but it apparently is okay if it comes from the other side. If a man says he's a woman, then he can speak to women this way. Are you going to read the tweets?
Yeah, this is the irony is, okay, so on the front, I don't know why we didn't even notice it, but on the front of Christian DeMay's, the cover of her book, Jesus and John Wayne.
Yeah, I think the copy that I got didn't I think they did a reprinting maybe, and then this appeared.
It,
because I don't think it was on the copy that I had. It was, maybe it was.
It was endorsed by Chrissy Stroop, who is a man. Dressed like a woman, pretending to be a Christian. And she it was now on the front cover, this blur, just glowing review. And you have to ask, you know, I know publishers just put things on books. If they get someone who says something on social media about a book, they'll say, hey, can we use that? But let's say Chrissy Stroop wanted to endorse your book, and your publisher said, hey, we got Chrissy Stroop's approval for you. What would you say? No, I don't want this person who's pretending to be a man, or I'm sorry, pretending to be a woman, this man pretending to be a woman, who is violating God's created order to say this is a great book. I would rather her not promote this. No, I think so people found this.
Well, it's been, you're right, it's been sitting there apparently, but I don't think very many people know who this person is. Like, I didn't know who this person is. I hadn't heard. I don't know everyone in the world.
She's violently...
You're saying she.
He, I'm sorry. Yeah. So he's a violently angry...
Ex-evangelical?
Well, no, he calls himself a Christian. He's not ex-evangelical.
Oh, okay.
He calls himself... Well, he might be ex-evangelical, but he calls himself a Christian. And so anyway, people were noting the rank hypocrisy on the part of Kristen DeMay with this man on her cover, and the fact that Kristen DeMay, you know, has left the Christian faith. And so it makes sense for her to have another person who's left the Christian faith, who professes to be Christian though, on her book cover. People were noticing this. And then Beth Allison Barr comes in to kind of defend, because of course when that started happening, you know, Kristen DeMay and Beth Allison Barr, of course, then they swoon because they're victims. They in both their books, they just lambast the church and are just snarky and mean and cold about the church and hateful, actually lying and slandering about the church. But then they get any pushback at all, and it's the patriarchy, right? The patriarchy's attacking us, and they swoon on the swoon couches. Here's a case. Beth Allison Barr writes on Twitter, you can disagree with life choices made by other people. You can disagree with their theology. You can disagree with their political alignment. You can disagree with their endorsement of a book. And she's essentially leading up to say, Kristen DeMay might disagree with her theology, but happy that she likes her book. Which is what Kristen DeMay's response was. I'm really happy that lots of people like my book.
Including this person.
I'm really happy that this trans activist is promoting my book. Anyway. So then the man, Chrissy Stroop, comes in to scold.
Yeah. So Beth Allison Barr is defending KK DeMay.
Yeah. And so Chrissy Stroop comes in. I mean, people disagree with my life, or I'm sorry, she quotes, I mean, people who disagree with my, quote, life choice to transition are bigots. Full stop. For many, many trans people, the other option is suicide. Queerness isn't a choice.
So, I mean, this is there's so much there. You can't, Beth Allison Barr is going on the old idea that we can all discuss this and disagree. Like, that's, this is the problem. If you try to feed the abominable snowman just, you know, a little bit here and there, hoping that it won't eat you, eventually you're going to be eaten by the abominable snowman. Like, yeah. You can't go along with it,
right?
Thinking that you can agree to disagree or even have a reasonable conversation,
it's
because somebody, some point, a man is going to come in and tell you to be quiet. That's so, but then instead of saying, well, hi, Chrissy, you know, I don't want anyone to commit suicide, but I do think, you know, reasonable people
can disagree.
About that's not what she says. She says,
I was writing angry and didn't think carefully about my words. I'm sorry for that. I understand what is at stake. I've worked with too many teenagers. So she submits.
Yeah.
She rolls over, submits to the patriarchy.
Yeah. So that's the patriarchy. Like, you can have a good one or a bad one. And when the bad one dresses up in women's clothes and says that it's not patriarchy, like, you should back up off of that and say, get your laws off my body or whatever, you know? Where is your feminism, man? Like,
yeah. Well, and where's your Christianity? I mean, this woman, I'm sorry, this man, I can't, that's so confusing. This man is, you know, violating God's order, calling himself a woman. It's an affront to the gospel. And Beth Allison Barr, who calls herself a Christian, can only submit to him. That's all she can do. She can say, women, submit to the
trans man.
Submit to the man who scolds you about trans. It's, and of course she has to, though, because that's the ideology. You can't, whenever Chrissy Stroop is a victim.
I mean, in this ideology, that's just so interesting, because that's not true. Like, not everyone that says Lord, Lord, not everyone who says they're a victim is a victim. Sometimes you can look at somebody and say, oh, that person's actually not a victim. You know, when Putin says, oh, well, I just had to go into Ukraine because they were, when I built up all my weapons here and they responded angrily to me, look how sad my life is. Why are you all cutting off all my money or whatever? That's the same kind of, if you provoke someone a lot by lying, and then that person begins to act a little bit angrily in response, you are not the victim.
Right.
Right. But that's how it works.
Right.
Over and over and over again. So.
I mean, the idea of the response that for many trans people, for many, many trans people, the other option is suicide. You know why people commit suicide when they're trying to be a woman, when they're really a man, or trying to be a man when they're really a woman? It's not because people don't recognize that they're women or men or whatever. It's because everyone does recognize who they are, and they know who they are. And the tension between what they know to be true and what they're trying to pretend is where the self-destruction comes in.
Very damaging.
Yeah,
to the psyche.
So what you would do normally in a counseling situation is help the person say, come to terms with who the person really is, not who the person wants to be, but who you really are according to your body. And that would probably make it easier for you to live.
And, you know, maybe you have this is often the case. Maybe you have a much too narrow idea of what it means to be a man. You know, maybe you were confused and really did think it was about how much football you watched. Right. It's hard for me to really believe that, because it is 2022 and there is a vast expression of masculinity in the world. And I don't really actually know very many people in person, Preston Sprinkle stood up at Revoice and said that he had a really wrong idea of masculinity. He really thought that it was about how much, killing he did. Like, he forced himself to go hunting because he thought that that's really what it meant to be a man. And I thought, well, I shouldn't, what can I say to that? Really? I'm shocked that that's what you would think. It is, you have a PhD in something, you've lived in the halls of academia, and you're going to tell me that you thought masculinity meant killing a lot of birds and squirrels. Color me extremely surprised by that claim. There are, we've had the internet for a lot of years. There's a wide range of what it means, what it looks like to be one sex or the other. But it only works, the trans thing only works if you keep a very tight, narrow grip on, you will only accept and adopt a caricature of certain, of male or female. And then you beat everybody off, right. And don't let them speak into your life at all about that. This is a great tragedy, and more people should, you know, did not accept it, however kindly.
Right.
But I can say that at the same time that I can say to this Chrissy Street person, don't talk to women that way. Beth Allison Barr is a human person with a soul. Don't talk to her that way. Don't mansplain her.
No, I don't mind her mansplaining. I don't mind people mansplaining Beth Allison Barr. She needs to be mansplained. But...
No one should not mansplain. Mean,
not rudely, but...
No, don't splain anyone.
Yeah.
You mean, the only person who can splain is God.
No. Not mansplain.
No.
That's what we do. What do you think it's, what do you think preaching is?
No, it's actually not. It's that the preaching thing what is God's
splaining. How are you defining mansplaining?
Okay. Preachers that get in the pulpit and condescendingly explain to people like they're idiots. No, mansplain is to say something to someone in a condescending tone, something that they already knew, or something that's wrong. Like,
so do I have to mansplain you about how you're wrong about what
mansplaining is? Yeah, you're wrong about mansplaining. And I'm sorry, but the pulpit is not a place to mansplain. Or no, explain anything. No, if people
hear any kind of instruction is mansplaining, right?
That's what some people do, but the origin of that term was that a condescending, inappropriate tone, telling somebody, usually a woman, something that they knew already, or something that's not true, or as if they're a child,
and they need to be helped to understand.
Well, that's what the man thinks. But he's actually telling her something.
See, that... we have both been on record saying that Beth Allison Barr and KK Dumais need to be spoken to in a very firm way and explained.
Well, I haven't said that. I've said they were wrong. If I could say that to them,
we had a whole conversation about tone.
Firmly tell them.
We had a whole debate about tone. What do you mean? I haven't. You haven't. We've had like an ongoing battle with like lots of people who are supporting these two women about tone. What do you mean you haven't? What are you talking about?
I wouldn't have put it that way. I don't think people should tone police, except if you're going to be hypocritical.
And you've been sarcastic and snarky.
Yeah.
So and you've gotten and you've been defending that.
But not condescending.
And I've been defending that.
I haven't been condescending because... though.
I just think it's intentional. Of course, anytime you correct somebody, it's going to be seen, even if you're right, it's going to be seen as condescending.
Well, yeah, I can see how that's true, but I think there's still ways to take people. So here's the thing, though. That no. I'm clarifying my thoughts as I speak. The person who cries out, don't patronize me, don't condescend to me, when somebody engages with their actual, the content of their speech, when I engage, or for instance, the president of the CBMW engages with the content of what Beth Allison Barr is saying as if she's a person,
which is okay,
which is what she is.
And you say a little bit of sarcasm.
Yeah, and you say
with her content.
With her content.
Right. Okay.
And you say, no, that's not like okay. Preston Sprinkle is a PhD. He's a doctorate in something. He's a well-known person, human person with a soul. Yeah. I can engage in modern speak. I can engage his content. And even question it. Like, is that really true? Is that really, you know, I don't like the way that you exegeted the scriptures there and that talk, every voice. that's very different from me coming and saying, you're a bigot. That's who you are. Mm-hmm. No. And so, but the problem is that Kristen Dume and Beth Allison Barr and others, whenever anyone engages their content, they cry foul. They cry victim. And what that has done is that now they've set themselves up to be explained to by a bad actor who doesn't who can actually mansplain. Like, if they had defended their intellectual, if they had understood that people were engaging with them as real people whose ideas needed to be looked at. It's actually a great honor for people to read Beth Allison Barr's book and engage her engage what she's saying in real terms. So if somebody writes very critically about her book, that's a great honor because they've taken it seriously enough to do that. They didn't just say, oh, well, that stupid woman from Texas or whatever. Nobody has said that to her except for a man, Chrissy's troop, from the left. Yeah. That's the person who has splained her. No one else has. If she had engaged more seriously with her critics, she wouldn't, I don't think she would, that would have been great if she'd done that. So no, I have not splained. I have engaged the content of other people, sometimes sharply. I think the content of other people is bad in some cases, but
and sarcastic
and sarcastic. Like
that's what I mean. Beth Allison Barr and
Kristen Dume's book is very, the tone of her book. She says that she did it on purpose.
Yeah.
She adopted that tone because she thinks the evangelicals are so bad, have gone so far astray, that she had to adopt a sharp tone mm-hmm. to get them to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And likewise, I'm saying I similarly have to adopt a sharp tone to warn people away from what she's saying, because what she's saying isn't true.
So horrible, right?
So, no, I'm glad I had the opportunity to clarify this.
I still think mansplaining is fine. Because what's defined as mansplaining isn't man.
No, you've misunderstood talk. Well, some people think that when men just talk,
it's mansplaining.
It's mansplaining. But if you, that's not really the original use of the word. It became a joke because then it was anytime a man opens in his mouth, he's mansplaining. But there is a way to know if somebody is condescending to you personally.
Why don't we use the word condescending rather than?
As I love the word splain, when God splains. I mean, God splaining is my favorite. So, or ansplain. Yeah. I don't want to give it up. It's my favorite. We should stop doing this because
we have lots to do today.
We have lots to do today.
Everything in our house is broken.
Yeah, everything. Everything is broken. That should be our motto for 2022. I don't know if we'll be back next week. There's a good chance that we won't be back because we will probably be away from our computer and not be able to podcast. So don't be shocked if next Monday comes around and there's nothing from us.
Right.
But
we tried to switch to Tuesday, but people were upset with us.
Yeah. So. And we are here for we're here for you all. Right. You're just you one. So, well, thank you so much for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.